SiriusXM 110.
No referrals, no waiting room, no copay. Direct from the NYU Langone Medical Center, this is Doctor Radio.
This is SiriusXM Doctor Radio. From the heart of the NYU Langone Medical Center, this is Everyday Health with Dr. Carol Bernstein.
Welcome to all of our listeners to one of your very favorite Doctor Radio shows here at SiriusXM 110. I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein, a professor of psychiatry and neurology and vice chair for education in the Department of Psychiatry here at NYU. And if you tweet, you can follow us on Twitter at NYU Docs to find out the topics on each show as we're discussing them. And remember, Doctor Radio was created for you, the listening audience, to provide access to experts in the field of medicine who can respond to your comments and answer your questions. So keep those phones handy. Our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@siriusxm.com. And as usual, a super duper show lined up for you today. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what's coming up later on in the show. So you all know that the Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl a few days ago, but there was a little bit of rioting afterwards. So we're going to be talking about crowd psychology and chaos theory, understanding crowds in order to control them. My guest will be Dr. Clifford Scott, PhD, who's a professor of social psychology and co-director of the Keele University Police Academic Collaboration in the School of Psychology at Keele University in Stratfordshire in the United Kingdom. He is chair of the British Psychological Society's Social Section Committee and associate editor for the British Journal of Social Psychology. He is also managing director of his own consultancy and training company, Crowd and Conflict Management, LPD, and he advises governments and police forces internationally on crowd management policy and practice. That should be really, really interesting. And after that, in our final segment, we're going to have open phones. That means you're going to be able to call me with all of your stories, thoughts, comments, and questions about issues in mental health, anxiety, depression, substance abuse, PTSD, all the rest of it. So in that final segment, we'll have open phones, so remember that. But first, I am delighted to welcome back Dr. Mark Agronin, who is board certified in adult and geriatric psychiatry. He is vice president of behavioral health and clinical research at Miami Jewish Health in Florida. He is an affiliate associate professor of psychiatry and neurology at the University of Miami's Miller School of Medicine in Coral Gables. He's written a number of books entitled How We Age, A Doctor's Journey into the Heart of Growing Old, and his latest, which I'm delighted to talk with him about, The End of Old Age, I'll take that, Living a Longer, More Purposeful Life. Mark, welcome back to Doctor Radio.
It's really great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I really love the title of your book. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, we always like to do a little bit of personal disclosure here. And for people who haven't heard you before, what got you interested in medicine and then specifically in psychiatry and geriatric psychiatry?
I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin called Appleton, and my grandfather was the town doctor in a nearby, even smaller town called Kaukaunas. I grew up with such a strong role model of a general practitioner and a town physician, and that inspired me into medicine. And then just growing up around so many older individuals really grew a love in me of what aging was all about, and knowing about stories people can tell, their wisdom. And it really naturally led me into going into the field of geriatrics when I decided also in terms of psychiatry.
And what do you love best about this field?
It really all comes down to just those one-on-one connections to make with people. I find that with older patients, they really put the relationship first, that connection with the doctor. And I find, as much as I have the true honor to get to know them and help them, it's also something that really is helpful for me. I learned so much from them, and that really is what led to a lot of the writing that I do, in particular this book, because I wanted to make the point that aging brings strength with it. And when you sit and talk with someone and learn about them, those come through so clearly.
It's so interesting because we live in such a youth-oriented culture. And, you know, I'm intrigued really by the title of the book. And, you know, I don't know how many of our listeners out there have had the chance to watch Frankie and Grace on Netflix, Grace and Frankie, which is absolutely fabulous, particularly, I think, related to this book, you know.
Well, it's what I love is any show or any program, and there are more and more of them out now, that really break down
barriers. Yeah, it's because of us baby boomers, definitely.
That's true, and to show a different way of aging, different from just the negative that we're so focused on often.
So why did you decide to write this particular book, and what is it about?
I found after the book How We Age that came out in 2011 that so many of the discussions I was having with people had to do with what they're learning and gaining from aging, how they're growing. And it just struck me that we have to end this notion of old age, which is so negative and so such with such a focus on decline, and we need to focus on these strengths that people gain. And that just naturally led to the writing of the book. So the title, some people might think that it's talking about a potential cure for old age. It's quite the contrary. I'm saying you have to embrace it, understand that there are difficulties and challenges. Obviously, that's what I work with every day, but also realize that you're gaining so much, and if you can identify that and leverage it and celebrate it, it makes all the difference. And science has a lot to tell us about what that difference is.
Well, you know, an analyst that I knew a number of years ago said to me, there are two ways to enter into old age. One is to embrace it, as you say, and the other is to involute and kind of give up. So, you know, I think really the question, I mean, I completely agree with you. I run around all over the place saying now I'm so old, it doesn't matter anymore. I can say what I think. you know, it's really just, it's not an issue. But how do you help people who are struggling with going the wrong way with it?
Well, what you said a minute ago really embodied the approach that people need, realizing that you do have freedom, and sometimes greater than you had when you were younger, too.
Oh, much greater, actually.
In the word of Matisse, say what you want to say. To express yourself, to get involved in new and different things. I think when people realize that potential and they're able to, you know, take stock of all of their strengths, that's really the place to begin. And I often begin with an exercise with individuals. I would liken it to what someone might do with a financial planner. You sit down and you take stock of all your assets. In this case, we're not focusing on your financial aspects. We're focusing on what are your personal aspects.
Right.
What have you experienced? What can you do? What do you want to do? And when you make a whole list of that, most people are pleasantly surprised at everything that they have at their fingertips.
Right. I couldn't agree more. So, folks, if you're just tuning in to us, we are talking about embracing old age, really, with Dr. Martha Gronin, who is an adult and geriatric psychiatrist and an affiliate associate professor of psychiatry and neurology at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. If you are entering the aging process, actually, we can probably in a little bit, Mark, talk about what is old age today or what we mean by aging. But if you have a story you'd like to share, how you've really dealt with what I guess I would loosely call some of our physical and a bit of our cognitive decline, but still manage to embrace things, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines are open at 1-877 NYU Docs, that's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. And I'd like to welcome Alan from Wisconsin. You're on Dr. Radio here at SiriusXM 110. Alan?
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, good morning. Dr. Gronin, I've read your books, including the new one, and I think you're just a fabulous writer. I've been following your career because I've heard you speak before. But maybe, and I'm also happy that you're a fellow cheesehead, which I just have been reminded of, but maybe you could tell me about your particular family. I know you've written about your uncles and your grandfather, your elderly uncles, and how they have embraced their aging, because you've alluded to the fact that they're very active and play tennis and do art and all sorts of stuff. And how does the aging process occur in your own family? And again, I appreciate your books, and I absolutely endorse them for anybody to go buy. They're fabulous writing.
Mark?
Yeah, well, thank you for the comment. I think you point out something really interesting, and that is if you look at the current generation of individuals in their 80s and 90s, most of them really didn't have role models of what it's like to be at that stage of life. They're pioneers in many senses, and we have so much to learn from them, even when they have struggles that they face. And so, for instance, in the book I write about, I'm fortunate to have the two actually younger brothers, my grandfather, both in the 90s, who are still incredibly active and busy. And I speak to them all the time about the difficulties and challenges that they face. But by the same token, I learn how they deal with it, how they face it. All of us in our lives have individuals like that who can, you know, really show us the way. And that's part of the wisdom that I talk about in the book, that it's out there for us to really learn from aging. You know, we get so focused on how to make an older brain like a younger brain, but we have to realize that the older brain has the advantage in so many different areas, and we want to try to learn about that and capture it and plan now so we can maximize that as we get older.
Alan, thank you. I really appreciate your comments, and continue to enjoy reading Mark's books. I agree with you. I think that they're really very fascinating. Mark, I'm going to turn back to you and say, why do you think people's ideas about aging, trying to turn back time or turning to the fountain of youth, are so embedded in our culture? I mean, you know, everybody's looking, you know, no more wrinkles, act like a 20-year-old, you know, all the rest of it.
Well, it's really an extension of the fact that only 100 years ago, the lifespan was around 50.
Right.
And think about even when Medicare was created in the 1960s, the age that it began was 65. That was old at the time. No one expected how long people were going to be living. And so from a cultural standpoint, part of us are still hooked into that mindset that life, you know, once you get into your 60s and 70s, tends to be more about decline and not that long. We're blindsided to some extent by the fact that we're living much longer than we ever imagined. And to some extent, we're not prepared for that. And we want to try to, I think the way we try to prepare is to anticipate the worst. But we really have to get over that. It's interesting, as I talk to so many friends and colleagues as they enter their 50s and 60s, already they're getting these negative messages as they hit those milestones, the 50th birthday, the 60th birthday. Often said in a joking way, but behind it is that message that oh my God, we're declining, death is approaching. We really have to stop that mindset because it really has consequences on decisions we make and how we enter late life. If we flip it on its head and we think more about a positive, purposeful approach, it does have an impact. And what's fascinating is you can see studies that look at individuals who have a sense of purpose, who have a more positive attitude, that they actually end up living longer and they live better. And so it's not just wishful thinking here, that it's actually true science which is showing us that fact.
What about, you know, and I would say this for myself too, people say they feel like they're young, they act like they're young, but their bodies and their brains are slowing down. I mean, I'm now the proud recipient of two artificial hips. I keep running. Now I've been saying to everybody, my God, you know, in another day and age, I'd be in a wheelchair. You know, I'm so grateful that I have this opportunity to continue to walk. But those things do happen as we live longer. You know, I don't know that evolutionarily we've been we're able to stand erect as long as we've stood erect, you know, precisely for the reasons that you've said, that the lifespan used to be 40 or 50 years, and now people are living to 60, 70, 80, and 90. So,
exactly. You raise a key point. We have to acknowledge these changes, and I think we'd all agree that, you know, if we could make a difference with them, certainly we don't want to slow down physically, and we know in some ways our brains slow down, so that's true. And one point I really make strong in the book is that we need to acknowledge that and not wish it away, but we also have to balance it out with you know, what's the other side of the coin. The other thing I focus on in the book is that regardless of the situation, whether it's a physical ailment, even with individuals suffering from Alzheimer's disease, it doesn't mean that life ends.
That's right.
It doesn't mean that there aren't things we can focus on that we can place value on. Too many theories of aging talk about everything is well and good, or we can survive if we don't have to face certain ailments. I don't take that approach. I include everyone in this book. The work I do is with some of the sickest and most debilitated individuals, but we still have to find ways to not only acknowledge their value, but find ways to improve life, to engage with strengths. It's part of life, but again, I think it's a more balanced and ultimately a more accurate view of what aging is really all about.
Well, I think, you know, one could say that approach, it's the same approach that we take with people and patients throughout life who have, I'm going to use the word disabilities, that isn't necessarily a fair word, but people who are struggling with chronic illnesses of various types, it's the same thing. We're encouraging people now to embrace where they are, not try to be someplace that they're not.
It's very true, and when we take that approach, the outcome is better.
Right.
And that's,
yeah,
to me, is what's really key. If we take steps, you know, just adopting a positive attitude is something that happens both in your body and your brain. We know that it affects hormone levels. It affects how we make decisions. It affects how optimistic we are. It affects our immune system. So there's no question, you know, whether it's longevity you seek or whether just simply having, you know, a better course through an illness or through aging, that we have a lot of control over, that we have a lot more ability, or we can help people more than we've ever realized.
Yeah, I think that's true. So again, if you're just tuning in to Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110, we'd love to hear from those of you who have parents and grandparents who have lived into their 90s, 80s, 90s, 100s, and what your relatives say are the secrets to aging well. We'd love to hear those narratives, to talk with our guest, Dr. Mark Agronin, who is an affiliate associate professor of psychiatry and neurology at the University of Miami Miller School of Health. I'm sorry, School of Medicine, that's where my head is, who's written a wonderful new book entitled The End of Old Age. Our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. So, Mark, tell us about the age points that you refer to in the book.
When most of us think about aging, we tend to focus on crises that we face, and a lot of theories of aging focus on how we work through these crises. So I wanted to talk about something I see all the time with individuals I work with, and that is when they face a change in life, a circumstance in which their abilities to handle it or to cope with it fail or are limited, and somehow they have to get to the other side. So I call this an age point. To me, it's almost like a developmental milestone of aging. And I make the point that even though it throws us off our game initially, and it can sometimes precipitate either a crisis or somewhat of a suspension in how we think about the world, we have the ability to work through it. And what emerges on the other side, the resolution to this, is often a stronger, more durable, and resilient person. And the more thoughtful we are about these age points, we really realize what our purpose in life is, because it forces us to really take stock of what's important to us, what do we want to achieve in our life. And that sense of purpose, to me, is one of the main motivators in terms of living a better life as we get older.
Can you just describe some of these events that you're talking about that may lead to this reckoning and resolution piece?
Sure. Well, for some people, it's a major illness. In the book, I talk about, for instance, with my in-laws, my father-in-law had faced a serious illness, and it changed their whole perspective on what life was about and what their goals were, and how they ended up, making some life changes and working through and ultimately overcoming the situation, and in many ways are much stronger for that. For other people, it has to do with either retirement by choice or forced. And so, for instance, I talk about someone in the book that I worked with who had been a very, very successful advertising photographer. And as happens in the world of art, styles changed. It was very difficult for him to change with it. And so he found himself losing that success he had. And he had to really wrestle with, what does he want to do for the rest of his life? What is his identity as a person? And so you can see, major changes. Losing a spouse or losing a loved one is another one of those major age points. We don't have a choice but to get through them, but how we get through it and what comes on the other side is something that we have lots of choices about, and frankly, we need people to help us. We need that extended family and community to really get us through that. But if they take a negative attitude, if they look at these events as life-changing or life-restricting, it's not going to help us really expand who we are as individuals and take advantage of all of those important strengths that age gives us.
Right. Well, I'd like to welcome Dawn from Pennsylvania. You're on Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110.
Hello. You just said to call in if you had long lives living relatives. My I'm only 49. I know that I'd say only 49, but my grandparents are 92, living on their own in California. My other grandmother lived very long and basically died of a stroke because of AFib. That was just after conversion. But I'm planning to live to 92 at least, minimum. Laughingly say 100, and my husband got me a book, Living to 100, because people in my family and his family live until they're like 92, 99. But I'm hoping to be the one that breaks that 100 barrier. But my grandpa, the one that lived the longest and pretty much an unexpected, very aggressive cancer got him at 93, he was walking 3 miles a day at 91 years old. He thought, well, when he was 92, wow, I can only walk a mile a day. and he met every week with his coffee group. He was a World War II Korean guy, Korea air pilot. But he kept his contacts together and, went out and did things. My other grandparents, they walk a lot and they do a lot of gardening. And my mom is really healthy, and what she did after she retired is she does a lot of volunteer work. She loves kittens, so does a kitten nursery. But I plan, I already have my second career going once I retire from what I'm doing, which is in medicine. I'm going to be a florist, but I have a plan.
I love this.
I don't know if that's a good plan, but that's my plan.
I think that's great. It's fascinating to listen to you because we have to realize that a past generation, or even 20 years ago, how many people could really talk about loved ones and role models in their late 80s and 90s who were so active and so vigorous? Mm-hmm. It just didn't exist. And so much of what you're describing is about the future and about what you want late life to be based on these role models. And that's so important. If 100 years ago at 49, you were just about at the age of the lifespan.
Right.
So it's wonderful to hear of your plans, and that will project you to that age. Because keep in mind, the likelihood of you living to 100 is becoming greater every day. I mean, the centenarians are the fastest growing age group in the country right now.
Yeah, and Dawn, well, there is, I think, even actuarially, and Mark, you can comment on that. I think the longer you live, the longer you live. Kind of thing.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
And I will also say that my uncle is going to be 99 this year, and he still teaches downtown at the NYU Film School. So, I mean, when people ask me questions like, if you thought about retirement, I'm like, no, just like Dawn. You know, my dad worked until he was in his mid-80s, and my uncle's 98, and my aunt, his sister, who's 87, was just featured, you're going to love this, she was just featured on social media in an ad for the Super Bowl. So she decided that her second career was going to be as an actress. So I'm all for that, you know. And she, you know, it's like, oh, I haven't even seen it, but it's apparently, I forget, but it's somewhere in social media where it's, you know, sort of elderly people who are cheerleading. So.
And one thing that's important to realize is that if you talk to any of them, I mean, you realize that they have struggles. They have changes related to age. So
right.
we're not wishing that away. We're not talking as if those don't exist. But they found ways to balance it out and to overcome it or to live with it because aging gives them other strengths. And that's the main point, that we have to look at a more balanced view of things.
Dawn, thank you for calling Dr. Radio, and keep it up there. I think your plan is terrific. And if I didn't have a brown thumb, maybe I'd be a florist too. So thank you so much and good luck with that. I'd like to welcome Matt from Texas. You're on Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I just want to tell my story. I'm a dentist He's 73 years old, perfect health, and still practicing full-time. And about 8 years ago, I took on the new goal of treating the TBJ patients, pain patients, headache pain patients. Today, I have a patient coming in from Dallas, which is 300 miles away.
Wow.
But it makes life exciting. And that's what it's all about. And if you're going to retire, you have to be tired first. And I bet I'm not.
Well, I, you know,
yeah,
let me just say, Matt, that I think, you know, you're talking, when you talk about TMJ and pain and, you know, and headache pain related to dentistry, I mean, your wisdom, I'm sure, and I mean, that's another thing that we can talk with Mark about, the wisdom and the years of experience that you have in dentistry is really wonderful. And, you know, those are the kinds of resources and special things that you're bringing to your patients.
That's right. I love the fact that Matt made a change, that he took on a new approach or a new skill. And that's, I talk in the book about reinvention and how sometimes to age well, we have to be willing to make changes and to give up certain things. And that can be difficult and painful. But ultimately, when we realize that we have the tools to do it, it makes a difference. And I give an example in the book of the great painter Matisse, who faced, you know, in a very, very life-threatening illness and came out of it impaired in certain ways, but also able to change his art that led to really a revolutionary change in the world of art, the use of his of bold colors and shapes. So we all have that ability and potential, but again, we have to be willing to make some changes and to realize that we can do things differently. That, for some people, is a barrier to get over, but when they're able to, it can make all the difference.
So, Matt, thanks so much for giving us a call. Keep it up. I think it's very impressive that somebody would travel 300 miles to see you. So keep it up and keep going, and that's the message. I'd like to welcome Suzanne from Florida. You're on Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110.
Good morning. I was calling simply to give an example of age milestones, if you want, and turning them around. When my father passed away about 25 years ago, actually my mother was older than he was, so it was a little bit unexpected that he would go first. And she was, you know, we smothered her for probably a good 9 months. And at one point she was at home reading the paper, and she read an article that said, why learn Italian in Montreal when you can learn it in Florence? And she just signed up, and she went to Italy, and she went to language school for 2 months. She was living with a family, and it was really good for her because she was doing okay at home, but by going there, it just reasserted the fact that she could stand on her own 2 feet. She didn't need the rest of us. That, you know, something that she loved is such travel and meeting people, she could do on her own. And so she did that, and it was a really good thing for her.
It's a perfect example of how people are able to make those changes. Putting aside if we didn't know how old she was, we could imagine you're talking about a teenage daughter or someone in college. And that's a wonderful thing when people see they do have those opportunities. And increasingly, there are many different services that are catering to older individuals to provide opportunities like that and journeys like that.
Again, Suzanne, that's a wonderful story, and you reminded me, and thank you so much for sharing it with us. And Mark, I'm going to tell the story because Suzanne stimulated me to remember this. One of my oldest friends told the story. She grew up on Long Island in the suburbs of Manhattan, and when her mother was 70, her father died, and she actually got involved with a widower in the same town. But unfortunately, about 3 or 4 months after they were going to get married, he died suddenly as well. And at the time, her daughter was living in Three Sisters, Oregon, which is in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of the Cascades in Oregon. And her mom said, well, I'm going to come, you know, I've got nothing keeping me here on Long Island. I'm going to pick up and move to Three Sisters. Well, at that time, my friend had decided with her husband and son to move to Portland and move out of the boondocks. And she was a little bit flipped out that just at the point where she was going to move back to the city, her mother was going to move 3,000 miles away to Three Sisters after after these two unexpected losses of people she loved. Well, her mom said, never you mind, I'm going to do this anyway. And she spent the next 20 years of her life in Three Sisters, Oregon. She made new friends. She worked. I think she died in her early 90s with her daughters around her. But this was someone who, at the age of 70, picked up and moved to a totally different place all by herself and had a wonderful time.
And these stories and these descriptions are so important for all of us because they teach us what's possible, even in the face of difficulty. And without question, I mean, she went through two devastating losses.
Right, exactly.
And yet found a way to make that change. It really is inspiring for us, and it's something that we can learn from the aging process, how to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I was just so struck by Suzanne's story, and I completely forgot about this, and I was really quite captivated. Well, folks, guess what? We're going to have to take a short break, but the good news is Dr. Agronin is going to stay with us for the next segment, so those of you who are on the line, hang in there. I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein, a professor of psychiatry and neurology. You can hear me every Tuesday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, repeated 8 to 10 p.m. We will see you in a few minutes, continuing to talk about the end of old age, thriving as we get older, with Dr. Mark Agronin.
This is Dr. Radio, Sirius XM 110, and on the Sirius XM app. It's Broadway's toughest ticket. But for one night only, Bruce Springsteen packs the house with Sirius XM subscribers. It's your chance to win your way in to Springsteen on Broadway. For official rules and to enter, go to SiriusXM.com/Springsteen before March 7th. No additional purchase necessary. A private performance. Springsteen on Broadway from E Street Radio, SiriusXM Channel 20.
Wednesday on Dr. Radio at 6 a.m. East. A new survey shows that many Americans are ill-informed about how to help others or themselves during a cardiac emergency. Dr. Fred Feit is here to help. Hear about the proper technique for CPR, when it should be used, and for how long. Call with your question. At 8 a.m. East, Dr. Rita Kurian discusses integrative medicine and heart health for women and the subtle ways your lifestyle may be putting your heart health at risk. That's some of what's happening Wednesday on SiriusXM Dr. Radio.
The only 24/7 radio channel dedicated to fantasy sports is here on SiriusXM.
Matt Kemp, a home run over the wall in center field.
Exclusively for the millions of fantasy sports players nationwide.
That's an Adrian Peterson touchdown!
Fantasy sports experts taking your calls.
Do not trade great pitchers.
The only 24/7 radio channel dedicated to fantasy sports is here.
SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio.
On Sirius 210 and XM Channel 87.
Hi, it's Ron Bennington from SiriusXM's Raw Dog Comedy Hits. Join me for my show, Bennington, that I co-host with Gail Bennington. No relation. We'll be talking to the biggest names in comedy every single day, from the best and brightest rising young comics to the greatest of all time.
Nothing touched the crowd like our comedy.
That just blew up for you.
The comedy just worked.
Bennington, weekdays, noon east, 9 a.m. west on Raw Dog Comedy Hits, SiriusXM 99, or listen on the SiriusXM app.
Tom Petty Radio. Discover Tom Petty's personal music collection and 10 years of buried treasure shows hosted by Tom. Yeah. His legacy continues. Tom Petty Radio, Channel 31, and streaming on your phone or on SiriusXM connected devices and speakers.
A dose of Dr. Radio.
And that the pain in the joints is a result, again, of inflammation elsewhere in the body.
Can the flu virus live on a bar or a seat or on a window or a door handle?
Yes, absolutely. Minutes to hours, depending on the situation.
It's important to strive for excellence rather than demand perfection.
Dr. Radio, because it matters where and when you get your health information. Sirius XM 110.
Unprecedented in access to top physicians and the location within the NYU Langone Medical Center. This is Dr. Radio.
Welcome back to all of our listeners to Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110. I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein, Professor of Psychiatry and Neurology and Vice Chair for Education in the Department of Psychiatry here at NYU. And for the tweeters out there, you can follow us on Twitter at NYU Docs to find out the topics we're discussing on each show as we're discussing them. And remember, Dr. Radio was created to provide you, the listening audience, with access to experts in the field of medicine. So keep those phones handy. Our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU Docs. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@siriusxm.com. And we are talking about geriatric psychiatry, The End of Old Age, which is a new book by Mark Agronin, Thriving as We Get Older. Dr. Agronin is an adult and geriatric psychiatrist, vice president of behavioral health and clinical research at Miami Jewish Health in Florida. He is also an affiliate associate professor of psychiatry and neurology at the University of Miami's Miller School of Medicine in Coral Gables. He's written several books, one entitled How We Age, A Doctor's Journey into the Heart of Growing Old, and his latest, The End of Old Age, Living a Longer, More Purposeful Life. And what a great, great idea, Mark. Really wonderful. So before we get to our callers, which we will, so hang on there, what is age culture? And can we talk a little bit about your five-pointed crown of wisdom?
Sure. Well, I wanted a way or a term to capture the diversity of all of the things that we gain, that we do, our interests, our relationships. And so in the book, I use the word age culture. You know, if you think about a culture, it's both something that can help grow different things. It also represents the diversity and the basis for our society. And on an individual level, I think it's a good way of thinking about how what we learn over time, what we gain, our experiences, our connections, our abilities, really help fuel our growth and play such a pivotal role in our families and our communities. And that really taps into wisdom. You know, we tend to think about wisdom in somewhat of a limited way. Someone who can make really good decisions, someone who can think very deeply about things. But if you look at the science and the research into wisdom, it's much broader than that. And I look at it almost the way we look at intelligence, the theory of multiple forms of intelligence, which really makes sense when you think about kids and different abilities that they have or have strengths and areas not as strong in. I think wisdom is the same way.
Right. So we can talk also about these issues of ambition and legacy and how the approach of death reshuffles our priorities and brings us insight, you know, maybe sort of a more transcendent perspective on life, I think. It's very different than being a 20-year-old, you know.
It's true. And that's, if you think about and think about some of the stories that you've told and other people have told on the show, think about older individuals who are very influential in your life, and you realize that there might be one or two areas that they really shine and that are really influential. That's their form of wisdom, which is strong. They have other abilities and skills, but sometimes it's one area that we really have a strength in, and we need to really recognize that, and that's something to be celebrated and something to build upon when we need to face adversity or we need to make changes later in life.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely true. Well, I'd like to welcome Kathy from South Carolina, who I think is going to bring us a slightly different issue that faces some people as they age. Welcome to Dr. Radio, Kathy.
Yeah, thank you. One of the new things that in our life, we're both 65, we both had good careers and looking forward to retiring, but for the past 4 years, we've had my granddaughter since she's 2 months old, and it looks like, you know, we're going to be raising her, you know, for our lives. And I've read a staggering statistic that 33 million grandparents in the United States raise their grandchildren, you know, past retirement age. And I've been on a mission to try to find a support group, looked at several churches in the area and looked online. And it, you know, it seems like, you know, we're going to send her to school, and hopefully, you know, go through college, but we're going to be in our 80s, you know, when she's out of school. And have you, you know, things may happen along the way. We have my son, and he has a family, and we touched on talking about him raising her at some point when we're not able to. So, you know, it's a big growing group in the United States, and a lot of, like our you know, situation came about because of my daughter and drugs, which is, you know, an overwhelming situation in the United States right now.
Sure, it's becoming a more common situation, and it may be that in your area that you have to be the one to start the group, to start the support group for other people in your position, because you're right, I'm certain there are many people out there like it. On the one hand, you do face the challenges of aging that you might, you know, in terms of your physical strength, your longevity, obviously in your 60s will be different than when you're in your 20s. Well, that's not to say that you won't have the ability and strength and vitality and longevity to do all that, and likelihood you will. You might just have to bring in more people to help. But I think, for me, there's another very important point, is that you really represent a form of wisdom, or a wise person I call the curator. And this is someone who really has a very highly developed sense of empathy, of concern and care for other people and for, you know, the basis of our families and our society, and look at the major role you're playing. In the past, it would have been unheard of for someone in the 60s and 70s to take on a parental role. But here, you're doing it by necessity. But I would argue that you certainly have lots of advantages that you would not have had when you're younger, and aging is really what gives that to you. It will be a challenge, but you have so much to give to this grandchild that can make, it will have a profound impact for the good in their life.
I'm going to say something else, Kathy, which is, I mean, it's not exactly analogous, but close. You know, there are people that are having children, women in particular, at older and older ages. So in addition to the, if you will, the grandparent group, there is a whole cadre of older parents, you know, people who are having children in their late 40s and maybe even early 50s. So that's another potential resource group who actually don't have the benefit of your wisdom of having already raised children. That's a different piece, but there may be in your community. Mark, I don't know. Kathy was asking about support groups. I think that's a really good point. I don't know of them, but perhaps are there resources on the internet? Are there groups out there?
That's a great question. And to be frank, I don't know. I know that there more and more people are being acting as foster grandparents, and in this case, your genetic grandparents. I imagine there are some, but I also imagine it's time to start some. And that's why I think it's going to come from someone like the caller and others to form groups like that, because it will really help them in their endeavors and bring them more support.
Yeah, I think, Kathy, the one of the points that Mark has made that I just want to emphasize again is that you bring to your grandchild wisdom and perspective, even with being, you know, perhaps you're not as spry as you were when you were in your 20s, but you bring something else into the equation. Now, the question of resources and support is a really important one. So I would encourage you to reach out in your community and see if there are others like you. I think that would be a really wonderful opportunity for you and your husband. So best of luck, and thank you so much for calling in to Dr. Radio. And folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the end of old age, thriving as we get older, with Mark Agronin, who is an expert in geriatric psychiatry. He has written several books, How We Age, A Doctor's Journey into the Heart of Growing Old, and The End of Old Age, Living a Longer, More Purposeful Life. If you have stories you'd like to share about someone who's aged well, who has shifted careers, who's found a new passion, their secrets to aging, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. And I'd like to welcome Bill from North Carolina. You're on Dr. Radio here at SiriusXM 110.
Yes, ma'am. I had a great, great, great uncle who lived from 1795 to 1912. I can show you the tombstones.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
My grandmother told me that the day he died, he chopped wood before he died that evening. And if grandmama said it, it was gospel.
Wow. So he was like, what, 115 or, you know?
Well, some people have lived to that age range, so you never know. But what I love about these stories, and there are many stories about the secrets of individuals who live that long, is you often see that there is no secret, that, you know, what they adopted is not necessarily something that you or I would do or might not fit the current theories of what's healthy or not. But in all of these stories, there is a true vitality and a sense of purpose and wisdom that ran throughout these individuals. And I think in the end, that carries the day. And it certainly is a wonderful story to pass down along the generations, because think about what it says about old age. In this case, you know, old age is not someone who is debilitated or diseased, it's someone chopping wood. And, you know, what could be a better perspective on aging than that?
Well, thank you, Bill, and I hope you're chopping wood until you're 100 as well. So thank you so much for sharing your story with Dr. Radio. We really have enjoyed it. Mark, could you talk about geropause? I think I haven't heard that term yet, but I think it's something that you coined in your book.
Sure. I when I started writing the book, I realized that there are a lot of terms that just didn't exist to capture some of the themes I wanted to focus on. So in the book, I coined the term geropause, someone does an analogy to menopause,
right.
You know, point in life where there's a big change and things, you know, change in our lives. And so for me, it's a point that some people hit where they just feel they're too old to do certain things. They hit it can be for some people a crisis, or some people just a time when they just think that, you know, they're kind of coasting towards the end. And everything that they did before, they feel they can't do anymore, almost a paralysis for some people. And I really wanted to emphasize the point that this is not unusual. Lots of people come into my office wanting to wrestle with this and talk about it, but there are ways to get above and beyond it. And it's really a matter of just examining, you know, what's limiting you, what's getting in the way, and how can you get around it. And there are almost always ways to move forward and to find a more positive approach. And I say this as someone who, you know, people come to me with very, very difficult challenges. You know, they don't come into the office of a geriatric psychiatrist if they're doing great and feeling well. Quite the contrary. And so it's important to be able to realize that there are ways to move forward.
So can you give us an example of one of these patients and how you've worked with them?
Sure. Well, going back to the individual I mentioned before who had been, you know, a advertising photographer and been very, very successful, and then the styles changed. And I would liken this to people who were working a certain career, and as circumstances change, or for so many people with the whole, you know, change with the internet and social media, they just find that the skills and abilities they had before don't apply in the same way. And there's so much they need to learn or change to kind of get over this. So for this individual, he really went into a period in which he just felt down. He suffered depression. He ended up divorced. It just was a very difficult time, and he retreated into a much quieter, less in some ways for him, less successful life than before. It took many years, but what I write about in the book is that eventually he decided to kind of get back to his art, and more recently has been focused on taking his photography he did before and combining it with some of his artistic creations and making these really amazing photographic collages that he'll bring into my office and show me. To me, it's a good example of how we can take what we have from the past, what we've gained, what our interests were, but we have to combine it with a spirit to do something new and different. That reinvention sometimes is really critical. But this is, again, where people hit a real bump, and sometimes they feel they can't get over that. And if you want to know the best example of that, anyone today wrestling with social media, the internet,
right.
iPhones, all that,
right,
how many
right,
of
right.
us turn to younger people
right.
for help? But we have to realize that, you know, it's there for us too. And we just have to apply ourselves. And we also have to step up and demand that people who are making these things take into consideration the interests and needs and abilities of people who are older as well.
Yeah, completely get that. I'd like to welcome Rick from Colorado. You're on Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I wanted to share with you and get your insights. When I was in seventh grade, I set 5 goals for myself, and I've accomplished all those goals except for one, and that was to be 120. And so those goals have pretty much governed my entire life, and I've worked towards those goals to accomplish them, and in excellent shape, work out, have spent a lifetime in academia, so my mind is still pretty vital. But 3 months ago, I had a setback and had a heart attack. And while I'm laying in bed recovering, I'm going, oh, crap, I'm not going to live to be 120. And I'm trying to readjust my goals. My first thing would be to, instead of shifting down into third, I'd like to shift into fifth and accomplish as much as I can in the remaining years that I've got, however they might be. So how does a person deal with the reality that 120 may not be accomplished?
Well, I think this is one of the most important questions. And first of all, the verdict's not out yet. So you never know, and with medical advances, who knows what the future holds. But I think you've already started to think about what you want to do now, what's meaningful for you. And there's been a lot of research looking to how, as we get older, our minds tend to take a different approach. We make this mental calculation that the horizon is coming sooner than we anticipated, or, you know, we never really anticipated it as much. But if we're going to make decisions or make choices, we want it to be more positive, more meaningful. People tend to graduate towards that. This myth about people becoming sad and depressed in late life is just that. It's a myth. And so you, in some ways, you really answer the question that you're posing, because you're already starting to recalculate and think about what's most meaningful for you. What do you want to do and accomplish? And you're working on that right now. And I think that's the most critical point. You never know what the future will hold. But my guess is, by taking a positive approach, which you have been, and projecting yourself into the future and dealing with an adversity as everyone deals with an adversity, you're going to get there in more ways than you imagine. I do have to say that when I work with so many individuals in their 90s and above, they all have issues like you talk about, whether it's a heart attack or a stroke or a major loss. And you realize in the moment, maybe it's difficult to project beyond it, but clearly people are able to do that. And so I just would wish you the best with that. And I think the approach you're taking is really a good model for many of us.
Well, thank you, Rick. I think I would share Mark's sentiments that, you know, maybe not 120, but you probably have a lot more to go. And I think that, you know, the issue of your heart attack is, you know, relates to some of the age points that Mark was talking about in his book, you know, that you have an event, whatever it is, and it forces you to kind of shift gears a little bit. but we still don't know. And I would think that your plan to live a long time is still a really good plan, and I would stick to that, you know, and look for other things. So thank you so much for calling in to Dr. Radio. I'd like to welcome Julie from Nevada. We have about a minute, so quickly, just a comment, please.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
I'm driving into work to a job that I started when I was 52. I'm a teacher, and I didn't even graduate from college until I was 52. My husband was forced into retirement due to a layoff, and he decided that this is as good a time as any to start writing, and he has written 7 novels.
Wow.
That are all published. And he also became a mediator with the Nevada Supreme Court, all since he's been 60, since he turned 60.
That's remarkable, and to me it's a perfect illustration of the theme of the book and why I wrote the book, that aging brings strength. We need to realize that and put that into practice, because it makes all the difference with how we can live better, certainly, even as we want to live longer.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is all about a frame shift, and that there, you know, there are challenges as we age, but there are many wonderful things about it too. Mark, the time has just flown by. I'd like to thank our callers, and also Dr. Mark Agronin, an adult and geriatric psychiatrist, vice president of behavioral health and clinical research at Miami Jewish Health in Florida. We'd like to commend you to all of you his book, The End of Old Age. I think it's a great book. Thank you, Mark. We will certainly have you back on the show. It's great to have you. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to switch gears completely and talk about crowd psychology and chaos theory with Dr. Clifford Stott. I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein. We'll see you in a few minutes.